Talk Shoes. Recorded live.
What up, people? This is Speak It Like You Think It Radio. I'm your host, Nas, joined by the all-star cast as usual. Tonight, we're going to get into some of these small stories because we don't have the big ones, but we still going to make it work, man. And I'm joined tonight by the professor of all things sports, the one and only Craig Barzy. What up, Barzy?
What up, man? Same suit, just joking. What's going on, man? What's going on?
Ain't nothing, man. Shout out to Naughty Dread. I'm also joined tonight by fantasy football genius, the official, like a ref with a whistle, the one and only James Roberts. What up, James?
Yo, what up? It's your boy doing this fantasy basketball in the playoffs. About to go back to back.
Back to back, like the Miami Heat. That's what we're talking about here. James Roberts, fantasy, football, and basketball genius. I guess we got to add that now. But let's get into these stories, man. The first one I want to touch on is Mark Cuban. He really went in. You can find this story on ESPN.com. He talked about how young basketball players should take the D-League option. If you're a top 50 NBA prospect or top 50 player, should go to the D-League. You'll learn NBA schemes. You'll learn how to defend in an NBA environment, play against some sub-NBA talent and some NBA talent that just hasn't made it yet. So, I mean, you'll get paid. I don't see any downside here. Let me get your thoughts on this, man. Mark Cuban advocating players to go to the D-League out of high school. Let me go to James first.
Yeah, I actually don't have a problem with that. You get paid, and it's not like they're going to be getting paid a couple thousand dollars. They're going to be getting paid probably
like 50 grand
or more.
Mm-hmm.
So if you still want to go to school, you can still go to school, although it won't be on a basketball scholarship because you'd be ineligible. But you're not getting pimped,
yes,
because
sir.
You're getting paid, and then you still had an option of playing in the NBA that year.
Mm-hmm.
So from a player perspective, I guess it would probably be a win-win.
I don't see any downside here. And while I switch this over to Barzy, let me add this for you on this. The one and only Larry Brown has come out and said that even though he respects Mark Cuban, he thinks he's wrong on this one because of the level of expertise in the NCAA coaching ranks, and that college is better talent-wise than the D-League. Your take?
Man, I think I tend to agree with Larry Brown on that, man, because you watch some of them D-League games, man. You know, dudes who are like second-tier college players, you might see go for 30 in the D-League, man. I mean, I watched some D-League games, and it didn't look that great. You watch it, you know, I even watched the D-League All-Star game, man.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. There was some cats in there, man, you know, came out of nowhere, but, you know, they look like great players, you know what I mean? Hell, yeah, what was that kid from Baylor who was a pretty good player, was dropping 50 in the D-League game? I forget his name, man, a point guard. You know what I mean? So, I seriously doubt that, man. But I tend to agree with Larry Grimes, so I'm pretty sure that he's correct when he assesses it that way. Let me say this, man. It's a good idea for those guys, but let's keep in mind, man, if the D-League system is tweaked, if it's tweaked and there's some changes made, yeah, it's going to be a good option. But the way it's set up right now, why would I be if I'm a top level recruit coming out of high school, why the hell am I going to go to the D-League? Number one, it's not like you get drafted. You know what I mean? You still got to sit out that 1 year and you play for the D-League, whatever, you get hurt. You're not under contract with nobody. And the salary, I hate to tell you, James, ain't that great. You know, D-League, they say, you know, you make like $1,200 every 2 weeks down there, dog.
It's 50 grand. I mean, that's the number we're talking about for one of these high-level guys. But, all right, my thing is this. The NBA, of course, is in cahoots with the NCAA. That's why the D-League is not a perfect system like the MLB minor league system is. If they were all, you know, parent and parent teams running, you know, running the system that they would run on their big league like they should be, and they ran it in a real way to where they made it an option instead of the NCAA, then I would agree. I would say, yeah, they need to go to the D-League.
Yeah.
But as
That's
it is now,
yeah.
right, as it is now, I mean, you're talking about uncharted territories. You're talking about like Brandon Jennings when he went overseas to play. You got to kind of make your own way. So I see that point. But we do have to say Larry Brown is biased. He's the coach at SMU right now. So you know what I mean?
Well, right now, I mean, have to say it's got to start from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, college athletics is a better option. But if you start getting guys starting to do that,
yeah,
then it'll generate more money for the D-League like it generates money for colleges. Now, after a while, all the talent start going to the D-League as opposed to colleges.
Right.
And it just takes time. But
the D-League would need a major overhauling, man. To me, I don't see the appeal in the D-League. I know y'all say, like, yeah, it's the NBA. You know, some of the cities that you play in, it's not like, you know, A-level travel arrangements for the P-League. I mean, if I'm a high-level recruit, what the hell would I want to go play in Podunk State in probably some gymnasium, you know, look like some high school gymnasium I'm probably playing in, when I could play for Carolina for a year, Kansas, UCLA.
It's the idea of sharecropping or building your own. That first couple of years of planting, building your own is going to be kind of tough. So those first classes, they're going to have to go through the hardships. But if they do it, the classes after them will benefit from it, and they will have the structure of basically what the NCAA has.
Yeah,
and the NCAA will go back to what they should have, student athletes playing in a gymnasium, not in stadiums.
Well,
so, I mean, it would change everything.
It's though on the NBA changing because it don't matter what the damn kids do. If the NBA don't change the D-League system, then I see this as all for naught. The NBA,
if the talent comes to the D-League, then the sponsors come too. So that's when the money comes and everything changes. That's what I'm saying. Once the talent comes, let's put it like this. If Jabari Parker and my man Wiggins were in the D-League this year, we will be seeing those games on TV. That things would change because everybody would want to see it. Like, and then the sponsorship dollars come, and you know the whole structure changes. That big billion-dollar deal the March Madness has, that's out the window. Once the talent leaves.
Another thing you got to think of too. You got a 100-year tradition of people going to college before they go to the pros.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that you got to break. A cycle you got to break.
Yeah.
So,
Guys want to hear Dickie V say their name on TV. They know how much that means, man. Guys have dreamed of that their whole lives. So, I mean, this ain't no easy thing.
So, it'll probably take like one of the top kids who cannot make the grades. And they say he's going to have to sit out a year instead of go to college for that to probably happen.
I think it's going to take more than that. I think this is going to take double what the Fab Five was. Not even where the Fab Five was five guys who decided to get together. You're going to need 10 to 12 guys of the top guys. I'm talking top 20 to decide. We're going to the D-League, all of us, and we're going to create a show, and we're going to change everything about what so-called amateur basketball is supposed to be.
So, man, there's no forward thinkers out there, though, man, as far as in the you know, the NCAA as far as changing the rules. I mean, everything is always going to be proactive. You look at this, man, you know, we're waiting on the NBA for guys who to come into the D-League to change the system.
Right.
We're waiting on everything to be proactive. Why don't the NBA or NCAA direct change and try to evoke change into making things, you know, better for you know, the recruits or whomever by changing some stuff up. Why don't NCAA change up some of their way that they're thinking and the way that they're doing things as well, so that they can welcome in the recruits as far as wanting to go to college, make it more palatable for a guy to want to say, man, I want to go play a year in college. You know,
for the same reason that a pimp doesn't send his girls to an accounting class, for the same reason, you don't want to lose the money. So that they're going to keep this raggedy system as long as they can. That is their job as the NCAA, to keep up this charade of student athletes as long as they can. But
until somebody does something and they have to then change the way that they do business. And that's what I'm saying is not right. Because you see that they started talking about with the college football as far as, you know, having, full 4-year extended, scholarship offers and doing some things to change and make, you know, why is that the case? Why, you know, that's what people should be speaking out. If you want to be, you know, doing things and making changes proactively, if you should be making those changes, if you know that you can be making those changes, why aren't those changes being done? Why are there no forward thinkers in the NCAA? That's what people should be calling attention to. I think the system that is in place, though, man, is working. If the NBA really wanted to bottom out college basketball, they could structure this D-League up in a whole entire different way.
Right.
The way it is right now, man, it's not enticing enough for any five-star kid, man, to want to go down to the D-League and, for a year. You know, those are half of the kids who get kicked out of school, that will go there, you know, like your boy from North Carolina or the kid from Georgia Tech. I can't remember their names right now. But, you know, that's something, an option when, look, you tried the school route, you got kicked out or what have you, can't go, and then this is your last option, the way it's structured now. Kids, the way I see it, man,
I agree with you 100%, but we also got to remember, if we're waiting on institutions to tear themselves down in the best interest of the children, then, you know, we're going to be waiting a long time. That is not what they do. They
that's
have jobs
they
and they have money. They're not giving
we're,
those up.
That's not what they do. But people
hey,
should
where,
they
hey,
make
what's
that
it going to take, man?
But what?
What's it going to take is one of these owners to tell their GM to be like, I'm going to offer this cat $50,000 to come play for me on my D-League squad. Then the kid going to have to daggone make a decision. His parents going to have to make a decision. Gonna take me $50,000, or we gonna go to college?
I don't know that the NBA has a structure, because aren't these like affiliated with the major league? With the not the major league, but the NBA ball clubs. These are subsidiaries of their clubs.
Some of them are, but they're not all like that. A few of them are, and that's the great thing, because a few of them are, and they actually run the same system. So when a D league guy gets a call up, he can just be plugged into the NBA team. He's already running the same sets. He knows
like
what
San
they do
Antonio.
Defensively, everything. Right. Some teams do it, but most teams don't. So that's common sense and how it should be. But like I said, man, these things aren't going to tear down themselves. I agree with Barzy saying that it is what it is right now, but people can be the game changer if they decide so. If you can get enough kids to decide so. But I don't know, man. It's a tough one. But let's stick with the NCAA, man, because I got a few more stories to kick the NCAA in the teeth on. The slowdown idea looks like that's been scrapped. People are giving Nick Saban hell on this one. How do y'all feel about this? Because I heard the arguments of them saying, well, players can't get off the field and people get injured. And, you know, no matter what, it sounds like crying from Saban, but I don't know. The slowdown deal looks like that's done, but it got kind of far for such a bad idea. I want to get y'all thoughts on that. Let me go to Barzy first. The 10-second rule that some guys were trying to get into the NCAA football.
Man, I don't know. It sounded like pretty much, it sounded to me like, you know, you started hearing this crap when Saban started bringing it up, especially when a lot of the teams that he's lost to in the in the past few years have deployed that type of you know, up-tempo spread offense. So I'm not sure why he even has been. I mean, nobody else was really talking about except him and Bielema. And the facts don't support no argument that there is injury. Oh, yeah, we could say you run more plays, there's you a chance to get injured. But, shit, we have overtimes. Look at the college system overtimes.
Right.
Well, you could have, like, fucking 18 over, you know, 18
right.
possessions, extra possessions run. Ain't nobody complaining about that. So, I don't know, man. It's a ridiculous argument. The offense... It does benefit the offense, you know, a bit to run up tempo for the defense can, you know, run at other guys out there. But shit, you know, if Saban got a problem with playing against those types of offense, why don't you deploy that type of offense and train your defensive players to play against that type of up tempo offense?
Right.
You know what I mean? You know, just a lot of crybaby shit, man. I don't like it, man. I don't like the fact that Bielema and them bringing that shit up. I don't like the fact that they even looked at it. To me, you know, that up-tempo doesn't mean shit. You still have to pick up first downs. Stop them, Saban. You know, you recruited the best damn players. Stop those guys from picking up first down, and then they can't run up-tempo.
Yeah, I agree. James?
Yeah, it does seem like a lot of crybaby stuff. At first, I was like, with offenses that have been progressing from the run and shoot to what it is today with all these spread offenses. And it's a way for teams that don't get the top players in the nation to be able to compete against teams with the top players in the nation. And those are the people that mostly use it, but still, most of them don't have the personnel to use. And even when they talk about teams that use that particular offense, let's talk about Oregon. Even when they go up against an SEC team, and we've seen it in the bowl game, they don't do well because the SEC personnel overall is better.
Well, hell, what about Stanford? Stanford seems to be able to defend Oregon.
Well, they play them every year, so you always play your rivals better than you play people that you don't play all the time. So I had a problem with them trying to make it like if you have injuries that cause more injuries and stuff. But I was like, okay, if that's up for review, like Barnes said, why didn't we have that stupid overtime up for review?
Right.
How come they count all that yardage after overtime? I don't think, after two overtimes, I don't think the yardage should be counted. The touchdown shouldn't be counted. It's just, because to me, that's just ridiculous. So.
No, I agree with what you're saying there, man, especially with that overtime idea.
So it's just like it's just a bunch of people crying because, like I said, this is a phenomenon as far as football is going because most of these coaches, man, like they've been coaching one way for like 20, 30, 40, 50 years. They came up behind this guy and they run the same stuff. So it's time for a change. So this is the change, the evolution of football. And I think the main thing that's really hurting them, I thought that new rule they put in place about the hits and you get suspended for a game, I thought that hurt the game more than anything.
Yeah, that was their way of trying to protect themselves on the safety lawsuits that we know will come in someday. I don't know when, but they will come someday. So they put in this BS targeting rule, which is affecting games. And since college football has such a, you know, importance on each game, You can ruin a whole season by one bad call. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. I hate that targeting rule that they put in this year or this past year. Moving on, I guess the last little thing for the NCAA, I don't know if this is something we need to talk about, but I guess I'll just make people aware. 2 weeks ago, the National Labor Relations Board met in Chicago to hear from Northwestern football players about forming the first college athletics union in sports American history. These boys trying to unionize, man. NCAA is running, man. They in trouble, man. I think they're on the ropes now. You know, I've been calling for this for what, 3 years on this show? I don't know, man. Looks like they're trying to form a union. I'm sure NCAA presidents all over are scared, but we'll see if this goes anywhere. So just
you know what they're gonna do, man. You know what they're gonna do. If they even see it going where the scales are tipping one way out of their favor, they're gonna make some kind of compromise. They're gonna get that shit walking on the table. They're gonna institute some kind of rule change. So I'm all for what the people are doing, man. Those people who look like, well, you're getting paid to, you know, you're getting a scholarship. Listen, man,
right.
You know, you got kids who are coming from lower economic means, man, that, you know, just getting your college paid for doesn't cover everything.
We got to be fully honest. I don't care if you're coming from the suburbs and your parents got paper. When you work a job, you deserve to get paid. I don't care.
True. That is the job. That is the job. Where as a college kid who maybe getting, you know, student loan, you can still go have a job and maintain your studies. But these kids, you know, playing basketball, they can't hold down an extra job. There's other NCAA rules and rigmarole for that type of shit, too. So,
right.
I mean, there's very little things that they can do because this is what they're focused on. That's how the school is getting paid for. So they have to focus on and the scholarships are not, you know, 1 year.
Right.
Yeah, so, yeah. You know, it's a thing for the kids. So let's not act like, you know, hey, you know, when I hear people say that, man, they're just looking at it through their myopic point of view. You look at it for what it is. Those kids are not working other jobs, whereas a regular student, college student, can go down and have a job and have extra funds in hand. You know, you got a kid who's worked, you know, who's playing basketball and got to go study. You know, he doesn't have extra funds to wash clothes or little, you know, necessities. I'm talking about personal hygiene necessities, you know, stuff. All that stuff got, you know, takes money, man. And if you're not working and you can't work, then, you know, how do these things, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's something, you know, small to give these guys. You're not saying that, you know, these guys can be paid thousands of dollars per week, but there should be some kind of stipend. Let's just be frank with that. And I think if anybody who can't see that or understand why that would be the case, like I say, is looking at the situation through a very myopic point of view, man.
Yeah, there's a lot of jealousy out there too, because a lot of people work a normal job and they know a lot of these kids are going to go play professionally afterwards and make a whole lot of money that they will never see in their lifetime. And as they look at it, for just playing a game. Now, of course, it is just playing a game, but it's about the revenue that you can generate while playing a game, just like an opera singer or somebody who can play an instrument or anything like that, or somebody who works in science or finance or whatever. If you have a special skill that requires a lot of payment, then you have that skill. The people who are upset about it should have went to school longer or should have specialized in something to where they would be paid for their special skill. I think the jealousy is an ugly thing, and it should definitely not be put on children because you didn't develop a skill in your lifetime. So that's another thing that bothers me. But this is my last little thing about the NCAA. And for anybody who's never listened to this show, yes, I am biased on this particular subject of the NCAA. So you are not hearing a two-sided view of this. You're just getting my best perspective on it and the perspective of the people on the panel, James and Barzy, tonight. I had to throw that disclaimer in, y'all, because I've been getting a little bit of heat for talking about the NCAA so much. So let's leave them alone.
You gotta throw this in there too.
Go ahead.
The college athletics today is different than it was 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago.
Yes, sir.
College athletics back then wasn't making the money that it's making now. It didn't have the advertising dollars that it has now. It didn't have the sponsors that it has now. It had the boosters, but the boosters weren't making money like these boosters handing out now. I mean, money that Division One program makes,
the TV deal, sneaker deal,
is astronomical. You getting 400 million or $1 billion for a rights to the championship game,
right?
And that's been distributed among the colleges,
right?
Filtered down to the athletes. Is going to the colleges and the coaches. The coaches in the 30, 40 years ago, they weren't even making the money they're making now. Coaches making $3-5 million a year now. Coaches was making $1 million.
John Wooden made more than 40 grand a year.
Yeah.
And that's John Wooden with all he did. I wanted to get out of this, but since James stopped me for a second, it has pushed me to bring up a couple of quotes that I had ready for the show. Thank you, James. I appreciate that. Let me go to one Oregon associate AD. His quote was, "I'm not saying it's fair or right, but student athletes do sign documentation basically saying their rights belong to the university." Naval Academy AD said, "You can't have animals running the zoo in college education." Gary Barta, Iowa AD, said, "I'll probably choose to do something else for a living if we ever had to pay players because it's so complex." Dick Bedore, former UNC AD, said, "I would not want to be part of it. We would have to think long and hard about whether this university would continue those sports at all." So that's the pushback when you even talk about giving these kids some type of compensation for their talent that's being used to line the pockets of other people. And I'll go to that infamous shot from Bomani Jones where he said, "If they're so against paying players and they think a scholarship is payment, then coaches and ADs and presidents and everyone else who benefits should be paid in classes. If Bob Stoops doesn't think $5 million is enough for him, he should take $5 million worth of classes at Oklahoma. Get his education on, since education is payment." See how that works.
No, but that's the man's livelihood. You know, you can't do that. You can't be talking about doing that.
Yeah, let the presidents take a pay cut and contribute some of their money.
Let
the director take a
let
pay
him,
cut.
Let them take those classes.
Take a pay cut.
Let them get educated.
Well, look, obviously, though, in the grand scheme of things, though, not every school probably could pay a stipend, maybe some of the low ends, but you can't tell me these big, some of these big Division One, high revenue generating athletic programs that they're running that they can't be done. Don't tell me that.
And we're talking about those super conference schools. You always talk about bars and you talk about real high. We're talking about those schools, the super conferences.
Yeah,
it
can be done.
All the super conference schools can do it,
yeah.
Because not only do they get the revenue from their stadiums, from the their sales, they get the TV money, they get bowl money, bowl money, which is what, $10 million. So you make it to a BCS bowl, they get $10-15 million that they split among the schools.
Yeah.
Not to mention the bowl that gives you other
money to play with. Yeah, I mean, this whole thing is dirty. I don't even want to talk anymore about it. We've laid this out so many times, and I think we've done a good job of laying it out. I mean, it's up for the people to decide, because at this point, the kids can't get it done by themselves. The people have to decide they don't want to attend or see things in this way unless the NCAA changes.
And I just want to say one other thing, and we can close it out on this.
Go ahead.
Mark Richt got in trouble because he tried to give his assistant coaches an extra couple of grand or 10 grand. And he was told he couldn't do that. And I think he got fined or something. Something happened or school got fined.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and he's making, what, $3-4 million a year.
And his assistants are making $100,000+ a year. These assistants, these Poe assistants that he had to help out are making big money as well. So
he could give him a bonus or something out of his pocket. Which they say you can't pay. Yeah, you can't pay outside of a contract, something in the bylaws or something.
It's against competition, because then you're keeping assistants artificially, because another school wants to put X amount of dollars on the table and you're giving him something under the table to keep him there. You're artificially keeping that assistant. So I understand them going hard on that, because they don't want this to become, the Wild West of the 80s as far as money just being exchanged, cash and bags and the whole nine. But I don't know, man. Everything there is so dirty, it's hard to even talk about specifics with it. But let's move on, though, man. Let's talk about this NFL rule that I am in favor of, that nobody else.
Breaking news, Champ Bailey getting cut.
What?
Breaking news, Champ Bailey getting cut.
Yeah, we saw that coming, man. We saw that.
Yeah, man. That's been overdue.
Go and switch to safety, Champ. You want to play again, go and switch to safety, my dude.
Hey, Broncos, $10 million on the cap, what they said.
Yeah.
That was long overdue. They should have did that when your boy from Baltimore torched his ass up.
Hey, Peyton sure ain't giving no money back, so you better get it from somewhere.
Yeah, but Peyton producing.
Truth. Truth. That's the truth. Champ, switch to safety, man. You could play a few more years, man. Go and do it, my dude. Much respect to Champ Bailey, future Hall of Famer.
Either that or he need to play the nickel and not play every down. Get off the field when they put his ass on.
Can he play the nickel? Can he play the nickel?
No, he's got to play the nickel almost every down.
Well, I'm saying he might have to be one of those rotating cornerbacks, man.
Yeah.
I don't think he's in every one of those guys to be on the field every time, especially where the matchup doesn't dictate. Well, let's say.
Which means you come back for the veteran's minimum. You don't get that crazy salary that you had for, who you were before. Either way, man, shout out to Champ. He was a baller. The rule I was going to talk about that I'm in favor of that everybody else is against, so I got to see what y'all say on this one. They're talking about moving back the extra point kick. I think it's to make it a 42-yard extra point. Just to increase the degree of difficulty, because they're so easy right now, as they've always been. I mean, that's kind of part of the fundamentals of football, so I understand traditionalists that disagree. But let me get the panel's thoughts, man. Longer extra point. Where do you stand on that? Let me go to James.
James.
We lost James?
Yes,
sir. Lost James. Hello? That quick. All right, James,
I'm here. What'd you say?
Longer extra point. How do you feel about that? That proposal.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that, and I think that would make it a little bit more interesting.
Please elaborate, sir.
The reason I say make it more interesting is the NFL want to keep you watching the game.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're getting ready to do an extra point, unless it's like the end of the game or something, I normally get up, go use the restroom, go fix me something to eat. I'm not watching no commercial. So they try
to. And it would also encourage people to go for two more. And they want this wide open offensive, football. That's what they want in the NFL. Barzy?
Hey, man, to your point of what you just said right there, have you looked at the accuracy of kicking? 42 yards, there's not going to be that, big of a difference. And are you talking about making it more interesting? If they really wanted to make it more interesting, why not just eliminate the extra point and make teams just run the two-point conversion every time? You know, if you really want to make it interesting, then, you know, just run a play. Run a two-point conversion play. Because last time I checked, man, who the fuck really was, you know, why is it saying that, you know, an extra point was entertaining? When did we have to spice that up? It's 1 point, man, and a field goal kick is coming on. And, you know, why we got to spice that up? Who was clamoring for that? I don't see. If you really want to make it more interesting, run the damn two-point conversion. Eliminate the extra point. Make people have to run the two-point conversion, and then kickers will just need it to kick the field goals or whatever.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got nothing.
The main thing about that is with the extra point, like I said, you probably could eliminate it, but they probably can't do it because that's eliminating like a whole position play on the field.
Yeah.
So the players union probably won't allow them to do that. And they probably have to go through all kind of legal stuff to try to even do something like that. But I'm sure every kicker in the players union is going to be like, hey, man, next thing you know, they're going to be talking about eliminating field goals. They already eliminated kick returners,
right. Pretty
much.
I don't know what putting it back to 42 is. Why is that so interesting? It's 1 point. Let's be frank. So they're trying to make people run. To me, that seems like there's more emphasis to say, maybe put the second guess people in. Well, maybe we should just run the extra point anyway. And we don't kick, if, you know, especially if you don't have a good, accurate kicker from long range, maybe you go more apt to run the 2 point, which in essence is eliminating the kicker anyway, because eventually teams will, you know, why pay a kicker a lot of money, you know what I mean, who not that accurate, kicking at 2 points, then that's eliminated. We just go run the 2 point anyway, and hopefully, you know, if we have to kick a long range field goal, we have, you know, that, you know, a lower level guy, not have to pay him that much money. Somebody who can basically, you know, kick it long.
Chip Kelly would cut his kicker first day.
Yeah, man. To me, that's what in essence it's doing, is forcing teams to run the 2 point conversion, be more apt to run the 2 point conversion, and then how long do you think that's going to last before people are like, well, hey, man, we don't need to pay a kicker $1 million. We can get some college kids. And, you know, hey, pay him less money. When the time comes up, we have to pay him a lot. We cut his ass and we get somebody else in there, and it's going to drop those guys' salaries way on down. So I can see why the kickers would be upset about that shit. But like I said, man, that whole spicing it up, it's 1 point, man. It's 1 point, yo.
I mean, why
spice anything up, man, with extra point conversion, man? Come on, man.
I have no real argument, that no real substantive argument against that. All I'm gonna say is I'm on that Steve Spurrier, man. Pitch and catch, man. I want to see 2 point conversion, man. Throw it around a little bit.
Then just eliminate it. I don't like this whole pretense of we just move it back, make hard. Look at the accuracy of the field goal kickers. Just look it up. Look how accurate field goal kicking has become over the past 10 years. Look it up. I mean, so. I don't understand you. Okay, you put the idea in the coaches, and then how long do you think is this going to last before guys be like, you know, hey, man, you know, that's eliminated 1 point. We're just going to try and run this 2 point conversion out here, all the time, man. And eventually, you know, the kick is not that important anymore. You know what I mean? So I don't like that pretense, man. If you just want to do away and make the teams run the 2 point conversion more often, then eliminate the 1 point. Eliminate the extra point. Make teams just have to run the play, and then we just keep field goal kickers for, like, late-game situations, to win the game, and that's it.
Right. No, I'm with you on that, man. I'm with you. But let's keep it moving, man. We got a bunch of stories to crowd in here before we get out of here. I guess I'll split these last couple up so we can kind of get through them. This was a surprise today. The Rams came to Courtland Finnegan, asked him to either give up some money or he won't be on the team. He was not willing to do that, so it looks like they're going to cut him. Courtland Finnegan cut by the Rams. You still think he got some, got a lot left? Let me go to James.
Well, he's been in the league about 8-10 years,
mm-hmm.
and he's made his living off of hitting, and he's never really been that good of a cover safety.
Well, corner.
So, or a corner. So he can probably play maybe another year, but I don't see him commanding that type of money anymore. And the way the league is structured right now, it's hard for anybody other than the quarterback to even maintain, I guess, over $5 to $10 million a year. So
yeah, it's rough.
Yeah, it's hard out there. So,
hard out here,
right now. They just bring,
player.
Yeah, they just right now they just bringing in players and on the cheap and trying to make everybody trying to make it work like that, bringing in players on the cheap.
Yeah, I'm sure
draft picks so important now.
Right, I'm sure Finnegan will get another job, but we'll have to see how this plays out. Barzy, let me go to you on this. Devin Hester has a high cap number. Well, he had a high cap number. The Bears haven't talked to him about re-signing. They did sign a new kick returner that Tressman knows from his days playing in the CFL, so it looks like Devin Hester will be shown the door. Are you surprised? And, I mean, do you see anybody picking him up?
If he's cut? Hell yeah.
It hasn't happened yet. Yeah, it hasn't happened
if
yet.
If they cut him, somebody's going to pick his ass up. I mean, he hasn't proven himself to be, you know, to be a good offensive guy. But shit, get him running back them kicks. Shit,
go to the Falcons. Falcons need somebody to return a kick.
Hey, man, right. I'm surprised he didn't say the Cowboys, man.
We got a guy returning kicks for touchdown last year.
He ain't Devin Hester though.
Nobody.
Those eight games that the Cowboys played, man, he might be good for one or two. Make y'all 10-6. You might get that.
True. This is true.
They finna add this new playoff spot, so I ain't got to worry about that no more.
Yeah. Here we go.
That's the Pittsburgh Steelers Dallas Cowboy rule. We got to get them two teams in the playoffs.
Yeah, y'all better fix y'all cap, and that's to both of y'all, Dallas and Pittsburgh. Another story, I mean, just a cap casualty. Only reason I'm saying this because I want to hear the ideas from y'all, but the Eagles cut Jason Avant today. Jason Avant is a player I've never liked. Nothing personal, just all about his talent on the field. I've never liked Jason Avant. I was happy to see him cut. And I was sad about that. Like, damn, I'm really happy about this man being cut. What the hell is wrong with me? Just because I don't like how he plays on the field. So my ridiculous dislike for Jason Avant, what athlete do you dislike for ridiculous reasons? Jason Avant is my guy. So sadly, I was happy to see this.
Damn, I know I got people I don't like, but usually when their names come up, I feel, but I can't think of anybody off the top of my head on that. Right now,
James, you got one.
You kind of threw me off on that one. You should have daggone hit us up with that before you put that one out.
It's all good, man. You know we ain't organized around here.
Oh, yeah. I know. I got one. Jason Terry, man. Hate that motherfucker.
Barney has never been a fan of Jason Terry.
That's one, man. Every time his name comes up or I see him on TV, man, I was so pissed that he won a championship with Dallas, man. I hated that motherfucker. I can't stand that motherfucker. If they cut him tomorrow, I have the same kind of feeling as you had about Avant. I would have about him.
Understood, sir. Understood. Ridiculous opinions happen sometimes. James, anybody?
I might have to go with Russell Westbrook.
Russell Westbrook.
And that's because I know they need him on OKC, but he holding Kevin Durant back.
Okay. I don't agree, but I understand that some people feel that way. I don't agree, but I understand. and Westbrook, is it the outfits and the press conferences and all that too that bothers you about him?
You look like, well, I'm
Naughty would say a blouse.
Right. Naughty would say the blouse and the
really,
press
conference. Yeah, I don't really get these kids nowadays, but I guess every generation get a little wilder.
Yeah.
As far as their dress and stuff go, trying to differentiate themselves, but I just would like him better on a different team.
Hey, I understand, man. I understand, man. We all have people that just rub us the wrong way. Let me get to some side stories of the NFL. But these are bigger stories than the NFL to me. These are societal issues, and they have to be talked about because of just how bad these two stories are. Barzi, I'm going to give you the NFL Network's former analyst, one of the slowest talking men in America, one Darren Sharper, and what he's facing right now for his, alleged problem with date rape, where he's out here drugging these women and having sex with them. And they're finding women all over the country in different cities who are saying, yeah, that was the guy who drugged me and date raped him, man, Darren Sharper.
Yeah, man, it seems a little odd, man, that it should just come up, and you got so many women saying, you know, the same thing, you know, after one case, it's very, you, especially the dude been doing this a while, man, you know, I don't know, man, I don't really know, but if this dude was doing that type of shit, man, then, man, he got to go down, man, I don't know why the fuck, to me, it seems inconceivable. A dude to play in the NFL would be out there roofing chicks up. And it seems like, you know, I think when I think of the NFL and, you know, you have that high profile, hell, you turn it down shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just trying.
Yeah,
when
you're talking about somebody who's doing shit like this, though, it's like you can't use logic to talk about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm trying to understand. I don't see reason to have to do it, but then again, maybe there's more into it involved than even I can comprehend. So I hope for his sake, man, that, you know, that shit is not the way it is, but, you know, you got chicks coming out here. It seems to me that if he was had a pattern of this dude, you know, that it would have, you know, it would have been out there before, you know what I mean? Somebody would have accused him of it before. But to have, like, just that one incident, then obviously, you know, you got pop, 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 all over the place, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it just seems weird that's how it turns out. Like, you got that one case, and then all of a sudden, any chick who that dude may have slept with could come out of woodwork and say the same shit happened to her. You know what
I mean?
That's true,
but we do got to add this in there. A lot of women don't report rape when it happens, and seeing this guy's face on TV could kind of fuel some of that anger about what happened to him.
True,
we got to throw that in there because then, okay, people will listen to me now because this guy's already being accused of this. Like,
true.
That in there.
I agree with you, man. Being a man with sisters, a mother, and nieces, man. I wouldn't like to see that happen to any female, but you know, I always know there's two sides to it. I really don't know what happened, man.
Mm-hmm.
I hope for his sake, man, that's not the case. It's an awful thing to do, if he's out there doing that, man. So if that is the case and he's proven guilty, man, he got to go down.
Got to go down hard, like Al Davis would say, for sure. I agree. James, let me give you an even tougher one because this one, I think, hits us even harder because there's a visual on it. This week, the Ravens released a statement saying Ray Rice and his fiance are going to a counseling couples retreat with some highly skilled professionals, I guess, to try to figure this out. But that video footage of him dragging that woman out of that elevator, man, that's something you can never unsee, man. I don't know what the opinion on Ray Rice is going to be going forward, but, man, that case looks bad. Your thoughts on Ray Rice knocking out his fiance and dragging her out of an elevator, allegedly?
Well, when I first heard it, I was like, That chick must have really did something wrong.
the statement from him, every wife beater ever had to ever beat a woman.
Like, because you didn't have a history of doing anything of that nature. So my next thing was, he might need to get on that NFL lawsuit, say he had something wrong mentally or something. But I still haven't watched the video. I guess I need to go watch it. But it's just like a story. Actually, it just sounds like something that you would hear probably like in the 70s. And
yeah.
It wouldn't even really been a story.
And that's where the video footage comes into play, because for women to actually see this man dragging her out of that elevator, I don't think he can ever win the public opinion.
It looks bad, man.
Did he knock her out in the elevator?
We don't know. Like, we don't see the footage of the fight. All we see is the aftermath of him dragging her out of the elevator, and she looks like a limp, dead body.
Yeah, man. To me, though, if he really knocked out, though, wouldn't it be some kind of bruise? I didn't hear anything about the, you know, report or whatever. I know they said, you know, something happened, but to me, man, she kind of looked like she was passed out drunk. The way he was, you know, dragged. It wasn't like, you know, what I looked at the film. I don't know, man. I really don't know. I tried to read the report, the accounts. I didn't hear anybody say that they saw him punch. I heard there was reports that that's what somebody said that he did, but they were in the elevator, so you don't even know what the hell. And then when she's coming out, man, she looked like a damn, you know, she looked like she was drunk, man, because she was kind of moving a little bit.
Yeah,
you know,
but Barzy, if that's the story, he has an agent. The Ravens have PR people. That would be out there. That would be pretty big out there that
good,
she
man.
Was drinking. That, I mean,
it didn't look good. It didn't look good in any case. Whether she was passed out drunk or he hit her with an uppercut in the elevator and put her to sleep, it didn't look good the way she, you know, opening up them doors and, you know, shaking a skirt and you trying to drag her out. You know, oh, man, it didn't look good. Not a good look.
Man, we're talking about a monumental apology tour if this dude is ever going to get on the good side of women. I'm talking about he's going to have to go on The View and take shots from everywhere and be an apologetic and teary-eyed and the whole nine to get past this thing, man.
Not really. If he ain't going to court about it, he don't have nothing to worry about. Because it's not going to stop now one woman from getting with him. It might stop
he's going
woman,
to court.
It's not going to stop no women from getting with him because he paid.
Look, dude, ain't going to be no other women, period. If there is a chance that he can get by this, it's going to be by him sticking by that woman and saying that we've mended our thing, our problems together. We are now married. I mean, he's going to have to go. He's going to have to go 100.
Basically, you say he's going to have a come to Jesus moment in front of a national TV audience, kind of like on Oprah.
You ain't lying, man. I mean, he's going to have to, dude, to make this happen. I don't know. Both of those stories, like I said, man, if they are what they look like on their face, they're both disgusting stories. Good commentary from both of you. I want to get some more in before we get out of here. So let me go to this. So on Deadspin.com, written by Jeff Perlman, he wrote about the Showtime Lakers, man, and AC Green, and his ability to live as an abstinent person during the Showtime 80 Lakers, where groupies are everywhere, beautiful women every night trying to throw it at you. I got to say this, man. I respect AC Green because a lot of people that get on their moral soapbox, they don't actually have the chance at what they supposedly don't agree with. Like some old fat dude talking about other people's, you know, immoral sexual habits. It's like, dude, you're talking that stuff, but women ain't coming up to you. So whatever. But for AC Green to be turning it down, You got to get that man. I feel like you got to get that man that respect, man. I mean, what do y'all think of that? I want y'all to read the story if you get a chance, because it's interesting. But what do you think of that, man? Being on the Showtime Lakers and being abstinent, grown man.
I think that man lying. he getting some or giving up some. You talking about it? Because the man still ain't married, right?
I'm not sure.
I thought he got married. I thought he got married once upon a time.
Yeah, he
could
be. I hope
he's still married.
Yeah, that's a long time ago. You talking about the 80s when he was in his
prime. I don't know if he married or not.
Well, give me a second. I'll look
it
up.
Look it up real quick, because I don't think he married.
Well, yep, he was married, and they had a divorce. He waited until age 38. To get married and supposedly to have sex. So he kept his virginity until the age of 38.
Hey, man, you right about that, man, because, you know, that thing, the flesh is weak, bruh, and it takes a dude who's really strong and the courage of his convictions to stick it, especially when, you know, you got, like you're saying, and we ain't talking about, like, this is you know, like he's in Milwaukee staying abstinent. You know what I mean? This is a damn Los Angeles during the heyday where they talking about there was chicks doing shit at halftime and after the games in the locker rooms. It was orgies over houses. I mean, Magic live a good life. I should say good life. When I say good, you know what the hell I mean.
Right.
They were having fun all the damn time. Now, there's consequences to that, as you can see, but you know, that's one of the things, if I ever got in the same room with Magic, that's what I want to hear. Tell me about the stories. There was things about velvet ropes at people's houses where you could, you know, where they were running velvet ropes and chicks were coming through, the porn stars, the groupies, like sex with 3-4 women at the same time. Tell me those stories, Magic. Tell me what was going on, man. That's what I'm, I don't want to even hear nothing about drafting or nothing. Tell me those stories. That's what I want to hear.
You ain't lying.
We need memoirs.
Right. Right. We need those. We need those Showtime Lakers stories, man. But
I'm talking chicks, man, that Heather Hunter, all those dudes. Man, they said the Lakers was running shit back then, son. I even heard Jerry West talk about it, man. Full effect, he said that they, you know, there was a lot of stuff. Shit, I don't know how he maintained, man, because like I said, when you're around that type of environment, for you not to partake, you actually have a you actually have to be of strong character, you know, to stand in conviction of you know what you know hold your ground and stand up for what you like you said he spoke it. He's got to follow through with that, so you know it takes a strong individual, man. So you're right, hats off to him for that.
Just to give y'all a little bit of it, the start of the story, they talk about his rookie year, and you know the vets would make the rookies sing a song that they wanted them to sing. So Magic comes up to him, tells him he has to sing. Rook, it's time for you to sing. And he started naming, you know, songs that everybody in the world knew. Michael Jackson, Prince, all this other stuff. AC Green didn't know none of the songs. So everybody's looking like, what? He's like, no, I don't know those. I never heard them. So finally, James Worthy has to come up and say, all right, man, sing Sweet Chariot. So the man stands there and sings Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, because he didn't know any pop songs, because that's the kind of life he was living, man. He was oblivious to the world, man. A.C. Green, really religious guy, not a guy who just talks. But let's keep it moving, man. I want to hear some ideas about the draft combine. We talked about it last week, but you guys weren't on. So I want to hear anything you got on the combine. And let me add this out there. There's always something new in the NFL, the next big thing. And for right now, I got my theory, and I'm throwing it out there. I think possession wide receivers will be the next big thing. Wide receivers who you can get late because their measurables aren't that good or their production wasn't all that, but who get to the NFL level because of how they pass so much, will be valuable. So I think we'll see more Marcus Colstons in the next few years. Let me get your thoughts on that and what else you thought of the combine. Let me go to Barzy.
I think the opposite, man. I think it's the slot guys, you know, the little slot guys who are more quicker than fast that you see, you know, rather than the possession receivers, because I think as much as passing, you know, the proliferation of passing that's going around in the NFL, you're still looking for the guys to stretch the field. But then those guys who can work the middle, like work across the middle, like Wes Welker, more quicker than fast in a matchup, because of the matchup nightmares, because of quickness, I think that's more the way to go. That guy who's going to, you know, ply to catch that 5 yard out, you know, I don't know. I don't know. There may be room for those guys, but I see it more, you know, the quick possession receiver guys who are more quick, maybe running the 4.6s, but have that quick burst.
Right.
To more of those guys who are getting the looks in the later rounds. Overall combine, man, it went pretty much as I thought it would, man. A couple of guys, you know, you expect to perform well in the combine, didn't necessarily perform as good as I thought they would. But overall, man, I thought it was pretty much as I expected overall.
Okay. James, your take, those two things. I'm right with Barzy on that. I seemed to go as expected. Few surprises, but a win is expected.
Well, I didn't see as much of the combine as I would have liked to have seen. I wanted to watch a couple of players. And so I got to watch Clowney and stuff. I thought he did outstanding at the combine. And then I got to watch Sam's. And everybody know what he's famous for. And once again, to me, that's
he didn't look good. He didn't look good.
Okay, if you all keep all the y'all keep coming out talking about they gay or whatever. And my thing is, if you don't, y'all is killing y'all calls. Because if you come out there and you say you gave you all this pressure and stuff on you, and you come out there and have a performance like that, and from what they were saying, his stock went down. He went from a third, he's a third, projected to be a third to a fifth, now he's projected to be a fifth to a seventh or undrafted.
Oh, he'll be drafted.
I think he will, man. I think he will too, but going into it, man, I think people, the numbers he put up in the SEC, people were kind of like putting him up higher. He wasn't the best prospect on that D-line. That Ely kid was, and it always was coming into the draft. If you paid attention to it and you didn't really look at numbers, man, basically what people were saying was basically how it played out in the combine for that dude. Not to say that he can't play the game. But
the
it was
other,
all
the other guy was facing the double teams. He was on the other side, and he was able to run free. Is that a good summary? I mean, the other guy, like you said, he's expected to go first or second.
Yeah, he's a 6'5" guy, kind of like, you know, out of the same mold. I think he's like a 275 pounds, 6'5" kid too. Pretty athletic, but Ely was always considered the best prospect on that team. I understand the numbers that Sam put up, man. I think somebody can find a way to utilize that guy because he's proven, at least in the best division, college football division there is, that he can rush the passer. But there was questions as far as his size. He's undersized, number one. So you probably have to put him in like a third down package, or, you know, some kind of package where you need pressure on the quarterback. He's not a guy who's going to hold up. Playing every snap at the defensive end. In a 3-4 scheme, he's showing problems dropping back. He's not as good at as quick as you would like, you know, to play in that 3-4 scheme as a rush linebacker. So, you know, there was always questions about that. And, you know, I'm pretty sure that, you know, even though he didn't perform great in the combine, they, you know, even if he does go undrafted, somebody will take a chance and get him into camp. If he can perform the way he did in the SEC, he's going to make a roster. So, you know.
Right, he's good enough to make a roster no matter what. So we will see him in the NFL. I mean, we'll have to see. No matter what, that announcement made more hype about him than, you know, what his talent actually kind of measured out to be so far. So, I mean, we'll have to see, man. Either way, the dude does have courage to come out and say that before the combine, to not wait until he has a contract in hand before he says that. So it is what it is, man. But if they think they're going to –
You got to think about it, though, man. I don't know how much courage it was. I mean, there is courage, but I'm saying the fact that it was known at Missouri and he mm-hmm. was out of the team, I pretty much think that the NFL would have known about it either way. He just made it known publicly to us. But I'm pretty much sure the NFL circles, it was going to be known one way or the other because it was already said in college and it was people who know him and what have you. He just made it public for our consumption and made it a media storm by, you know, coming out, you know, saying what he said publicly. So.
True. Let me
what I think my position player. I think there's going to be a lot of running backs taken. And they're going to be and I was looking at the running back drills, and the running backs that can catch out the backfield, it's going to be a lot of them making a big impact in the league this year.
Well, James, let me ask you this. Are they more worried about can you pass block and catch out of the backfield than are you a great runner? Are they more worried about those two things now? I mean, considering.
Most important, you got to be able to block out the backfield, and you got to be able to catch from the backfield. Right now, there's only a few pure runners in the league, and the other pure runners, they don't really get a lot of runs, so to speak, because they might not be good with catching out the backfield.
Right.
So
if I'm drafting third or fourth, and I'm thinking about a running back, I mean, if I know this guy's not going to be a 20-carry guy, you know, bell cow kind of guy, am I just looking at him and saying, okay, who can catch and who can pass protect?
That's what you're looking at because they're not trying to run any running backs 20 times. There's only about three or four running backs in the league that you get close to 20 carries, period.
Yeah.
In a game, so you're going to have to be able to carry the ball 10 to 15 times a game. You're going to be sharing with other running backs, and you're going to have to catch out the backfield. And it's going to come down who can pass protect better as to how much playing time you get.
Right.
So,
well, I think the NFL has already showed that, you know, you will have probably better stock the roster at that position where the guys can do a couple of different things.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy who probably is going to get the majority of the playing time is going to be the guy who's efficient at doing the things, like you say, the pass block and the catching out of the backfield and running a little bit. But then you're also going to have those guys who are, you know, the quicker guys who, you know, maybe can get outside, outside of the tackles and, you know, break something off long. You're going to have some guys who are maybe not so good at pass blocking and who are only going to be a couple of down guys, spell guys here and there. So they're going to stock the position with, you know, a couple of different ways when you don't want to invest. You don't have that bell cow like Adrian Peterson. You know what I mean? You're going to stock the roster with a couple of guys who do a couple of different things, guy who can bash it in there and tote the rock 20-25 times. You might have a guy who, you know, who can carry it, you know, carry the rock just a few times and do some, you know, different things on the field. So I think that's the kind of the trend that it has been going in the NFL for quite some time now for the teams that don't have those main you know, offensive running back stars on their team.
Yeah. No, I agree with that 100, man. Good points. I mean, it's only obvious the way the game has changed that's the direction that they're going to be leaning. I'm trying to flip through and see what else I had on the docket, man. Doesn't look like much. So we're going to get out of here soon, but there was one thing that we were struggling with last week. We were trying to do with the NBA, we're trying to do top five at each position. I think I'm going to save that until next week. I guess now I'll just reveal one of my positions, and we'll wait till next week to go into it. But small forward, all-time top five, greatest in NBA history, I got Dr. J, Larry Bird, Elgin Baylor, LeBron James, and Scottie Pippen. Those are my five top small forwards in NBA history. And we'll get more in depth with that next week and talk about the other positions and get everybody else's top five on there. But I want to wait until we get everybody on the line. But with that,
Gugliotta wasn't on there, man.
The great Tom Gugliotta, NC State's finest. That boy used to ball.
I'm surprised you didn't put him or your boy Tom Chambers on there, man. I was so surprised.
Dylan Shrimp. Dylan Shrimp.
Yeah,
he
man.
He no top five all time, man.
Oh, you said all. I thought you said white guys of all time. My bad, dude. My bad.
No, that's what I said. Dr. J, LeBron.
I'm just messing with you, man.
Oh, man. Yeah, I thought you was really going crazy for a second, Barzy, man.
Yeah, you going in.
Yeah, he got me right. I say, what the hell? But no, the problem's going to be power forward. And when we bring this back next week, you're going to see the arguments at power forward. They're going to start, and it's going to be ugly when we get into that. But, yeah, this is Speaking Like You Think of Radio.
Is Dominique considered a power forward or a small forward?
Small forward.
I thought he played small forward.
Yeah, I didn't put Dominique on his top list. I mean, he's top 10 to me, but he's not top 5. I didn't put George Gervin there either. So, George Gervin, Dominique.
Might have reviewed that.
Yeah, it's a tough one, man. It's a tough position. Small forward. The great Elgin Baylor, Larry Bird. You can't leave any of those guys off. I guess the shakiest guy you could say is probably Pippen.
Yeah, Pippen wouldn't have been in my top five.
He would have made it?
Pippen wouldn't have made it.
No.
Pippen should have been on the first Dream Team or the first Top 50.
Yeah, whatever, man. See, the hatred for Scotty, man. The hatred for Scotty is real out here, man. People
that's
forget
no
his
hatred.
Years
just,
in Chicago. They remember the years
just,
in Houston.
That's just the truth.
Man, that
I
is not
years at Chicago.
Scotty Pippen
to tell
is Scottie the greatest defensive player of this
Dominique.
Generation.
You trying to tell me Scotty Pippen better than Dominique? Not.
In my opinion, yes.
Not.
In others' opinion, no. I understand.
He can't hold Dominique job.
I guarantee you he could, and he did at a certain point.
Never did. We go back and look at the film, how Dominique took him to school.
I knew I was going to catch hell for not putting Dominique in that top five and George Gervin as far as small forward. So I knew those two I was going to catch hell on. I was fully expecting that. But it's all good, man. I understand, James. We're gonna drop your top five on there next week, so it'll be all good. I know you'll have Neek in that thing, but it was close in me picking Pippen over him. But I tried to do overall players.
You might as well say Damon Manning.
Yeah, that's another dude. Going back to your topic, that's another dude I never could stand
that's,
either.
That's who I can't stand. That's Danny Manning. Don't. Man, I need to see a psychiatrist about that. I think I can't stand that dude. Every time I hear his name, I get upset like it happened yesterday.
The one and only Danny Manning, who the Hawks
got
traded.
Got coach's job in college, man. I was like, man, fuck, man, why they had to hire that punk? He should never get a job. But, you know,
that man
he
ruined the Hawks.
Yeah,
he
man.
Ruined the Hawks, man. They traded Dominique for Danny Manning, one of the worst trades in NBA history. Still
Yo,
can't believe they did it.
Just going back to that conversation we had before the show started, man, That UConn roster, Marcus Johnson, Jeff Adrian, Marcus Williams, Ben Spencer, Hilton Armstrong, Ryan Thompson, Josh Boone, Rudy Gay, Craig Austin, Sean Anderson, Ed Nelson, the great Ed Nelson from Georgia Tech, Denham Brown, man.
Damn.
That's
like six NBA guys and about four guys who played overseas.
Yeah, man. The squad was deep, son. Damn. Even worse that team. But the thing about it, man, they had those twin towers with Armstrong and Boone.
Josh Boone, right.
Yeah, and I think your boy, what was that boy? Jahidi? What, not Jahidi, man. What was that cat from George Mason, man? Kind of muscled them down low, man.
Yeah.
Punk those guys in that tournament, man. I forget that dude. You know what I'm talking about, man?
I can't remember his name, though.
He was like 6'8", big dude, man. They said that he made a play football or something.
Down there beasting those seven-footers, man.
Yeah,
Give
man.
Work.
Josh Boone and his soft ass and Hilton Armstrong. Yeah, man. That shit was pathetic, man. But, you know, I digress.
Everything you said was 100, man. Those are all dudes who cash checks for playing professionally, and they got beat by George Mason. With the great Jim Calhoun on the sideline. No excuse for that, man.
Yeah.
No excuse. But, yeah, this is Speaking Like You Think of Radio. We're going to get out of here. But on with us leaving, let me ask this one last thing. MVP race, since everybody's asking this stupid-ass question, who is leading in your opinion? And who is going to win?
My opinion, I say it is even, but if you ask me who's going to win, I would say Durant, based on the simple fact of the work he put in and the win Westbrook was down, and that they currently have the best record in the NBA. Be it that fact, I would say he's going to win it, but in my eyes right now, it is still even and yet to be determined.
All right. Dan James?
Well, if he is going down between Durant and LeBron, as of right now, I might say that LeBron will win it, and that is because Westbrook is cramping Durant's MVP chance.
Okay. You sticking with that statement. I think Durant's going to win it because I think people are tired of voting for LeBron, kind of like when Karl Malone and Charles Barkley stole two MVPs from Michael Jordan. I think it'll be the same kind of thing. People are tired of voting for LeBron. So I think KD will get it.
But, kind of like what they should be doing for Peyton Manning. They should be tired of voting for Peyton Manning for the damn MVP. They might just give it to his ass every year, man.
This is true. With Tom Brady putting up those numbers with that team he had, man, it is what it is, though. They gave it to Peyton, so it is what it is.
Peyton Manning, the regular season champ.
Shit, who won it with was it the AP? Did he split it with Peyton that year? The year Peyton came back.
They gave it to AP outright and gave Peyton the comeback player.
You know what? It was that last game of the season. Remember when he ran for all those yards and almost got close to the record or something like that?
Yeah.
But he got over 2,000. That kind of pushed Adrian over. Yep.
You're right. 5 yards short. 7 yards short.
And he didn't go back in the game garbage time to try to get the record. So, you know, he had everything riding on his side. He had the sympathy, everything from the media. Yeah, he got it.
Oh, no. He got stopped. He was 7 yards away, and he ran out of time.
Oh, okay. My bad. I'm thinking of that game winning the overtime, man. So I'm thinking of the game.
They ran out of time, and that's how come you didn't get the record.
Okay.
You got to remember, their quarterback was Christian Ponder. They weren't throwing the ball nowhere.
Shout out to Christian Ponder, stealing money out there in Minnesota. Hey, man, do what you got to do, man. I understand, Christian. Get it while you can.
Y'all better call him by his right name, Mr. Sam Ponder.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He married the ESPN chick, huh? That man rolled the dice and won at life, Christian Ponder. Average quarterback, great man.
Below average quarterback.
Right.
He'll be back coaching at Florida State in the next few years.
See, it never ends. It never ends, man. That dude stays winning.
I don't know. He might stay the 7 years and get the pension and then go back to Florida State.
Yeah, he's going to hold that clipboard for a while, get him some backup jobs for a minute now. He ain't just going to cash his chips in.
They want to keep AP around next year. He better either pick up his game quick or he's going to find himself off that roster very quick. It's one of those two things going to happen because they ain't got AP ain't going to be one to be churning out 2,000 yards like that for a team who, you know, they can't pass the ball down the field and stack in the box with eight players in there trying to stop him.
Right.
Yeah. He probably will end up going somewhere eventually, man, if they can't get it together at quarterback.
Yeah. I love to see that, man. So with that said, any parting shots you guys got or we're getting up out of here? Because I got nothing.
I'm out, man.
No parting shots. This is Speaking Like You Think It Radio. Tonight I was joined by James Roberts and Craig Barzee. We'll be back next Wednesday with the full cast and ready to talk some sports, man. Thank y'all for calling in. Thanks anybody listening. And we out.
We out.
Easy.